This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Wouldn't it be weird if a telephone shakedown of the Ukrainian president by the American president, or the cover-up of same, was the thing that, you know, did it? Where to start with this one? Maybe March, when the country was awaiting Joe Biden's inevitable entry into the presidential election ring. That's when the anti-Biden blitzkrieg began. Here's Hannity in Krieg.
Joe Biden is continuing to be dogged by claims of international corruption stemming from his son Hunter's dealings in Ukraine while Biden was vice president. And clearly it has struck a nerve as sleepy, creepy Uncle Joe fired back at former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
According to the whistleblower complaint that found its way from the intelligence community to Congress and set the impeachment investigation in motion this week, there's much more than a presidential phone call to look into. There's an array of alleged evidence of an unprecedented abuse of presidential power for personal gain. A, quote, favor requested in the context of American military aid withheld. A back-channel communication with Ukraine that placed Rudolph Giuliani, who admitted seeking dirt on Biden, where State Department diplomats normally would be. And reports of more telephone transcripts allegedly relocated to unjustifiably classified locations. If we spend time on a thorough recap, there'd be no time to dig into the issues all of this raises. So consider the rest as read, okay?
Big news week, big week for metaphors conveying sudden, irresistible force.
Well, the impeachment dam is finally broken. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opening the floodgates by launching what she calls a formal impeachment inquiry after months of stalling.
The release of the transcript did nothing to slow the freight train of impeachment that the Democrats have now jumped on. Nancy Pelosi.
In the New Republic, Alex Perrine wrote, quote, "We seem to be barreling toward his impeachment." But Perrine doesn't necessarily endorse barreling or bursting or speeding locomotives. In response to reports that some Democrats anticipate a speedy process built around a solitary line of inquiry, Perrine pleaded for everyone to slow the hell down. This moment, he says, calls for deliberate deliberation. Quote, "I would like the full story, a complete and detailed account of everyone's involvement in everything." Historian Tim Naftali agrees, and he may know whereof he speaks. As a former director of the Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Museum and co-author of Impeachment and American History, Naftali is thoroughly acquainted with the process and recently has noticed some parallels.
I can certainly see the outline of something similar to what I learned a lot about when I was director of the Nixon Library, which is the kinds of abuse of power Richard Nixon used to engage in. What he would do is he would use the instruments of government to collect dirt on people he wanted to hurt.
Daniel Ellsberg, for example.
We've got to keep our eye on the main ball. The main ball's Ellsberg. We got to get this son of a bitch.
Well, but I was actually going to talk about Daniel Schorr, CBS correspondent, later he was with NPR. He wanted to hurt Daniel Schorr. He had them go to the FBI and say, "I want an investigation of Daniel Schorr," not because there was any reason to believe Daniel Schorr was not a patriot, but because he needed something which he could then leak to ruin Daniel Schorr. Taking advantage of the vulnerability of a foreign country whose neighbor is Russia and saying basically, "Do me a favor and investigate an American citizen," in this case, Hunter Biden, that's just like Richard Nixon saying to the FBI, "Get me dirt on Daniel Schorr." Now, I am not sitting in judgment yet. I am telling you that this is the outlines. A real impeachment inquiry would involve getting the president's side. It's got to be fair. People are asking members of Congress, do you support impeachment? The question should be, do you support an impeachment inquiry? It's a mistake for anybody in Congress publicly to say they support impeachment. And I am very worried about the comments that Chairman Nadler has made of the Judiciary Committee, because he seems to give the impression that he's already made up his mind before the investigation has started.
We are concentrating our resources on determining whether to impeach the president. Personally, I think the president ought to be impeached.
It's like the foreman of a grand jury saying at the beginning, I think this person should be indicted, before going through all the evidence.
So let's say you, like me, are eager to see the president effectively in the dock to answer for his conduct. I also don't want to see him or anyone else in a kangaroo court. Will this look like a kangaroo court under these circumstances? Will it actually be a kangaroo court because Nadler has prejudged? How serious is that rhetoric?
I suspect that that rhetoric is the reason why Speaker Pelosi decided that six different committees are going to be involved in the impeachment investigation. I think it's very serious. I don't think it's doing irreparable damage to the process, but it's going to make it that much harder for Republicans and independents to believe that the process is fair. I have a feeling this has to do with the fact that what people remember, understandably, is the 1990s. The impeachment of Bill Clinton was highly partisan. And I think for some, that's viewed as the normal approach to impeachment. The Nixon impeachment is so much further away. I mean, some are old enough to remember it, but they don't realize how hard the Democratic majority worked to make this a national effort. The leadership of the House Judiciary Committee let Republicans and Southern Democrats rewrite the articles of impeachment so that they were comfortable voting for them. That's how bipartisan the process became by the summer of 1974. Such a process may be impossible because of the era we're in, but it would be wonderful if Speaker Pelosi found some good government Republicans to lead some of these investigations. That would be one way of sending a signal that this is about the future of our Constitution. It's not about the future of the Democratic Party.
If the House does indeed impeach the president, could Mitch McConnell do approximately what he's been doing and just block the thing at the Senate door?
The Constitution is silent on whether the Senate has to proceed. It just says that the House has the sole power of impeachment and that the Senate, let me just read it, the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. But it doesn't say that the Senate has to meet. If Donald J. Trump is indicted, effectively that's what an impeachment is, indicted by the House, he needs to be cleared or convicted. It seems strange that the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts, who would officiate, that he would not require some kind of proceeding where the indictment is weighed and perhaps set aside.
I want to ask you about us, the media. What would you advise the press against in covering this process?
Make sure that you have an open mind. A number of people thought that there was going to be evidence of collusion. And when there wasn't evidence of collusion, they lost interest in what Donald Trump had actually done.
So he defined the terms of the investigation.
Yes.
And we unwittingly played along.
Richard Nixon tried the same.
I had no prior knowledge of the Watergate break-in.
No evidence has ever appeared that he did. He got away with that. But then he made a big mistake, which is that he said, and I wasn't involved in a cover-up.
I neither authorized nor encouraged subordinates to engage in illegal or improper campaign tactics. That was, and that is, the simple truth.
Nixon's denials were very, very precise, and that got him, because what happened was it was clear that he was involved in a cover-up. He had set a very high standard of behavior, and then the evidence contradicted that very high standard.
Okay, that was way back in the olden days when being caught in a lie could be politically problematic. Would that sort of problem that Nixon had, trip up Trump, who's, you know, 6,000 lies into his administration.
I do think there are lies and there are lies. Most of his daily lying people don't see as a test of our institutions. But as this investigation proceeds, the president will say one thing and his accusers might say another. And if there's evidence to prove that he's lying about those cardinal points that everyone has framed as key to understanding the health of our institutions and our republic, then the president gets hurt. I don't think the American people have changed so much since 1974 that they will appreciate being lied to in matters of high importance. We have a president who takes advantage of ambiguity. This is a president who made the Mueller investigation all about a low probability event, collusion, when it was about ethical actions on the part of a campaign when a foreign government is meddling in our democratic process. Once again, we're seeing the president make this all about, in the Ukraine case, all about quid pro quo and not talking about the problem of applying pressure on a foreign government to collect dirt on a domestic opponent.
I didn't do it. You take a look at that call. It was perfect. I didn't do it. There was no quid pro quo, but there was with Biden and there was with these senators.
Keep in mind, the president wasn't saying to them, and I want this to be done judiciously, and I want there to be courts and subpoenas. He was asking them for dirt. He was actually opening the door for them to make up things. The president of the United States was not asking for a favor on behalf of the American people. The president of the United States appears to have been asking for a favor on behalf of his reelection campaign, and that is a misuse of power, whether or not you had an explicit quid pro quo.
Nixon's stonewalling was famous, and as you've observed, he denied unlawful behavior almost right to the end. But it seems to me that he and his people did not spend a whole lot of time trying to undermine the legitimacy of the impeachment process itself. Trump, on the other hand, in all of the investigations that he's been subject to, has not only, refused to allow his members of administration to testify or refused to provide certain documents. He has gone on campaigns to discredit the investigators themselves.
And the Democrats did this hoax during the United Nations week. It was perfect because this way it takes away from these tremendous achievements that we're taking care of doing, that we're involved in.
Is he following a path that even Nixon didn't pursue?
Well, Nixon was capable of shame. And he also had a sense of presidential norms. He covertly did these abuse of power, but wanted to maintain the appearance of cooperation, while in fact he was engaged in very heavy stonewalling. President Trump doesn't seem to care and doesn't think that his supporters care. One of the huge differences is that the Republican Party in 1974 wanted Nixon to appear to be cooperative. I've seen evidence, diaries of one Republican in particular, where the Republicans are saying to the White House, please be more forthcoming with the Judiciary Committee, because they assumed he was innocent. So that's a big difference. Not only is the frame different because of the nature of the president, but also because of the nature of the Republicans. The other thing is, think of the impeachment process, even in the Nixon period, as water polo. Below the water, it was very dirty, and Richard Nixon's people were brutal against Republicans. When this process begins, if it continues, one of the things that I believe the press should be looking for and others is the extent to which the White House puts pressure on members of the Judiciary Committee, and that much of this pressure could actually be an abuse of power in and of itself.
The previous three presidents who have faced impeachment have had that experience under vastly different sets of circumstances. Furthermore, as you've observed in our founding documents, the template is intentionally vague. And we live in the Trump era, during which seemingly anything is possible. Can we be misled by trying to draw too many conclusions from our collective past?
I'm not suggesting that this process is going to go in the same direction, but there is a playbook for a presidential abuse of power. It doesn't predict the present. This is not my phrase, but I love it. I don't believe history repeats itself, but I believe it rhymes. looking at history gives you a guide so that you ask better questions about the present. But if you are too influenced by history, you won't think outside the box. The healing process that we are going to need as a nation after Trumpism has to be a healing process outside of the yuckocracy and outside of our major cities. It has to be everywhere. Talk to lots of folks and read lots of things. We are at one of those moments where civic engagement should be a patriotic requirement. Read, get involved, think, participate.
Tim, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Tim Naftali is a historian at New York University and co-author of Impeachment and American History.
Coming up, if you blow the whistle on the intelligence community, there is no protection for you in the Whistleblower Protection Act.
This is On the Media.